Hello and welcome to the HTXT AfriCast. It's Wednesday, we're recording this on a Tuesday, and we're doing it long distance today because we're outside the studio. So joining me on the wire is Mr. Clinton Matos. Hello.
Hello, and that is literally on the wire because I don't have fiber. I'm still using a copper landline like a peasant.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I can no longer do the trifecta because one of my air conditioners has broken down. So I'm literally sitting in my living room with a blanket around me and a hot water bottle.
Well, if we didn't have to record this, I'd have a loud-ass heater on. I have one of those heaters that's actually a fan. Mm. The way it turns into a heater is there's a coil in front of the fan that gets hot and then it just blows hot air. So that's what I use for heat because it suddenly became winter.
Yeah. Someone turned off the weather. Yeah. And you sound like you're using a fire hazard to heat yourself up. Anyway, let's move on because we've got a lot to get through in this podcast, starting with Wonder Woman.
Yes.
Which comes out this week on Friday.
June, yeah.
And you checked it out last week, didn't you?
So I saw it on... this wasn't a press event. It was just like a VIP event, which means you just had to pay a lot of money and you could get in. It was at 13th Fox, which is like a warehouse, like a trendy place. And they just set up a screen in there and we watched it there. You saw it yesterday for a press preview.
Yeah.
So you reviewed it, so do you want to start us off? Tell us what you thought of Wonder Woman, Nick.
Okay, well, you see, the thing is, when you ask me that, the first knee-jerk reaction I have is to say it's probably the best DC Universe film I've seen so far.
Well, this is the fourth one. Man of Steel, Suicide Squad, Batman vs. Superman, and now Wonder Woman.
Yes, and as you can tell from the stablemates, saying that is not very... very high praise, really, is it?
Yeah. It didn't have a lot to live up to, which is...
Yeah, the bar was pretty low. I enjoyed it. I'm going to nitpick at some of the things about it, but overall, I'd say I enjoyed it. I was pleasantly surprised when it... I mean, I don't know about you, but I was pleasantly surprised when it was over. Not when it was over, when it opened, there were all these bright colors on the screen, which is the first time I'd seen that in a DC Universe film.
That's how low the bar is, that we get excited by colour.
Yeah. Until I got to London, you know, when they put the sort of dark filter on all over again. Yes,
at least that made sense. Mm. There's a line in the trailer, it's like, this is London, and it's like, Chris Pine is like, yeah, it's not for everybody.
Okay, so if you haven't been following Wonder Woman, and you're not really sure what the story's about, basically, it's an origin story for Wonder Woman. Which is quite cool because you got to develop her character a little bit more than you did in Batman versus Superman, where she was essentially just a wild card in the deck.
Are you saying that they didn't give her enough character development in the three scenes she was in?
Four scenes. I rewatched that recently, and it was four scenes.
Counted the amount of scenes.
Essentially, it starts off with Diana as a child. The funny thing is, she's never called Wonder Woman at all, ever. Mm-hmm. This film, and she's a child who's on this hidden island that is filled with, you know, Amazon grown-ups. She's the only child on the island, and she's the daughter of the Queen of the Amazons, Hippolyta. And Hippolyta wants her to enjoy her childhood, and her aunt Antiope wants her to be trained as a warrior because she's convinced that the Greek god Ares, who was responsible for destroying a lot of humanity, is at some point going to make a comeback, and at that point, Diana needs to be ready to face him.
Yeah.
Then, after Diana starts developing some powers, men literally crash the party.
And we mean there's a plane crash. Someone lands in the ocean near them. It's literally crash.
Yeah. And that's a guy called Steve Trevor, who's a... American officer working with British intelligence. And it turns out, you see, the thing is about the island that Diana lives on is it's kind of locked in this bubble, which looks like ancient Greece. But outside the bubble, World War I is raging on. And
they're invisible. Some kind of magic is protecting them from being seen.
Yeah. And Steve Trevor, this pilot, basically has information that he believes can change the course of the war. Diana hears about this world war, and she is convinced Ares is behind it. So she leaves the island with Mr. Trevor and heads for London and the front line, so she can stop Ares and he can drop off his notebook. And then that's the basic setup. And it reminded me, I don't know about you, it reminded me a bit of Captain America.
Well, I think that's just because maybe it's one of the world wars, and it's more old-timey than the newer ones, because most of the superhero films are set in modern day.
Yeah.
This was more old-timey. Also, you don't see World War One a lot in cinema. And this was it was quite strange seeing it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it did kind of feel like that beginning of Captain America.
Well, it wasn't just the fact that she was at a world war. It was also the fact that it was an origin story, and she's been around for ages. And it was also, it reminded me a little bit of Thor as well, because when in the first Thor movie, Thor comes to Earth and is kind of like a fish out of water, and is behaving the same way he would in Valhalla, and she's behaving the same way she would on her island.
But
I think that Wonder Woman does more with that. First of all, like there are moments where you actually see this sort of horrific cost of war, like with the refugees coming across. There's a scene where some refugees are coming across a bridge, on stretchers and in wheelchairs and on crutches, and there's a horrible scene where the evil German antagonists basically mustard gas an entire town. And you didn't really see much of that in Captain America.
No, there was just, it was more gung-ho, I think.
Yeah. And also they addressed the overt sexism of the early 20th century, which still exists to this day, which I thought that they handled that pretty gracefully. I didn't feel it was at all as in your face as some commentators have said.
Oh, yeah.
I found the whole... Yeah?
It wasn't overt. It makes sense. I mean, there still is sexism now, but there was a lot more back then. Mm. And asking Chris Pine, why is there a lady here?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's made all the more ridiculous when you consider the fact that this is Wonder Woman. Okay, she's physically stronger and more intelligent than any of these guys at all.
Yeah.
So, one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie was when there's this Council of War, and Chris Pine's character, Sergeant Trevor, has basically presented his evidence, and their attitude is, well, this evidence is a bit late. There's an armistice that's about to be signed, and we're not going to jeopardize that. And who cares if a few more 100,000 people die? At least the war will be over. And Diana basically says to this general, you should be ashamed of yourself. Where I come from, generals lead their men into battle, their soldiers into battle. They don't hide back here in an office, which I thought was great. And action-wise, what did you think?
Oh, yeah. My biggest problem with the action is the CGI. I think the CGI was really lacking. It really didn't look like 2016, 2017 CGI.
What part in particular?
There's a part you see part of this in the trailer where she runs through no man's land.
Mm-hmm.
That part to me just looked terrible. It's not that it was shot wrong or had a bad idea. I think that's actually maybe the best scene of the movie.
Mm.
I just think the CGI is terrible.
Yeah.
After the trench run, as I'm going to call it, because they had trenches, there's a scene where they have some like city fighting, and I also think the CGI in that is terrible. And then the big ending, there was also a lot of CGI, and I didn't think any of it was convincing.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why. I mean, this is a big budget movie. It's not like they didn't have the money for good CGI. I didn't think it looked good at all.
Did you watch it in 2D or 3D?
2D.
Okay, so I watched it in 3D, which the thing was is that I didn't have a problem with the CGI, but then again, for some reason, the 3D glasses I've given, they seem to put like a kind of dark filter on everything.
Yeah.
Like I take them off every now and then and go, oh, there's all these There's more color in this film than I thought there was. So maybe that could be why the CGI, didn't fail to convince me. I don't know. Here's a question for you, though. Speaking of the trench run, what do you think about that? I mean,
that scene.
Well, I mean, leaving aside the fact it's a very well constructed action set piece. What are your feelings about, I guess my question is this. I read a review where someone said, maybe the First World War is not the best place to stick a fantastical person like a character like Wonder Woman, because millions of people died. Hey?
I thought that was the best part of it. Not that millions of people died. Jeez, you said the wrong term there. I thought having it is like everybody's using like bolt action rifles and like the Germans have a machine gun and that's the height of military technology, and then Wonder Woman runs through them all with a sword and shield. I thought the difference there was awesome. I really liked that. It kind of felt like a video game where you're completely overpowered and you drop in behind enemy lines and just cut everybody up.
Maybe I'm not expressing myself well. I don't have a problem with the action side of things. I thought it was very well constructed. But my thing is, it's like, you have to bear in mind that this was a real situation where real people died, and it's not being treated with a hell of a lot of respect by this film. You almost say to yourself, well, if only Wonder Woman had pitched up, the war would have ended.
You mentioned Captain America. There was flipping issues of Captain America where you see him punching Hitler in the jaw. It's kind of the same thing. I know what you mean. I think what they did in the movie is kind of paint the Germans, because it's always Germans. They try to paint them as just absolute bastards, so you don't really feel bad when Wonder Woman runs in there and cuts them up. And I think they're kind of saying, listen, we understand how bad it is, because, Wonder Woman talks about how bad it is all the time, and she's stirred into action when she sees all the people who are affected by the war. And the whole reason the no man's land trench run scene even happens is because there's like a woman and a daughter stuck in the trench and she's freaking out, and then Diana's like, I've had enough of this, and she literally runs into gunfire. So I know what you mean. It's a little tone deaf. I don't think the writers were I don't think they did enough to make it as serious as it could have been. But I don't think it was a huge problem. Like, I really don't think it's worth noting, like, to take points away.
No, I agree with you. And also, it was nowhere near as overwrought or as down in the mouth as some of the DC Universe films we've seen.
Flippin' Man of Steel. I can't believe they took the hero of hope and they'll, like, make him sad.
I thought Gal Gadot was very good as Wonder Woman.
Problem with Gal Gadot or Godot is that she doesn't really have the physical presence, and by that I literally mean, I don't know how to say this without sounding strange, she's not large enough to be Wonder Woman in my mind's eye. Because
do you mean large enough? Do you mean tall enough or muscular enough or what?
She doesn't look like an Amazonian. She just looks like...
Well,
she looks like a model who's dressed up as Wonder Woman, to me at least.
Well, I mean, leaving aside the fact that Hollywood's got its issues on who and who should not lead a particular film and what they should or should not look like, you can't really say that any of the Amazons in Wonder Woman look like Amazons at all.
Yeah, I mean,
if they were, they'd have one breast each.
Yeah, I know. There was one actress who was like one of the trainers. She looked like a proper Amazonian, but that was my only real problem with her. In my mind's eye, she doesn't look that much like Wonder Woman, but her performance was pretty good. Something also, her accent, because she's from Israel, her accent worked really well in this context, because she didn't sound like she's just somebody from the UK or the US. Sounded like someone who's from another land, which is Israel. But I liked her performance. It was really good.
No, I thought she was great. I mean, if you consider the beat she has to hit, like kick-ass hero, leader coming into her own, wide-eyed explorer, learning about the world. Those are very different kind of things, beats to hit in the performance. And she managed it really, really well. I thought Chris Pine was pretty good.
Flippin' Chris Pine, he had that like fringe that kept getting in his eyes, And at the end, he's trying to give a thoughtful speech, and his fringe keeps slipping into his eyes, and he has to move it away. I was like, really? Why couldn't you give this guy a proper haircut? Yeah, he was pretty good.
The supporting cast was really, really good. Here's the thing. I would say that, like I said, this is a very good placeholder film heading up to the Justice League. And I'm hoping that the Justice League learns some lessons from it, like keep things a little bit lighter. Don't make all of your superheroes look like they want to lock their bedroom door and listen to Korn. That sort of stuff. I mean, I enjoyed it. Overall, I really enjoyed it, and I think it's worth checking out.
I just have a lot of problems with the CGI. I think the ending was terrible. The whole scene, the whole like third act, I don't think was very good. The first act was really slow. The second act was great, and then the third act was terrible, in my opinion. I can't talk about why the end especially was so bad, because it would spoil which characters are which. Also, don't go on the IMDb page, because that will also spoil it. But I had a lot of problems with it, but I thought it was still pretty good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the funny thing about Wonder Woman, I mean, like, leaving aside our thoughts about the film, like, Wonder Woman got into the news this week because there are all women screenings of it. And, like, a ton of guys lost their heads over it, which I really don't understand.
Yeah,
I really don't get that at all. It's just...
A lot of times PR people have men-only events.
Yeah.
No one has a foot over that. I don't know. It fits the theme of the movie anyway. Mm. It's an island full of women. It's called Themyscira. That's just people being dumb. Anyway, next review will be below this for you to read in your leisure. We're going to talk quickly, or I'm going to talk quickly, about something that I got to play with, which I believe is the first one in South Africa. I was told it was the first one in South Africa.
So if it's not, they lied to you.
Yes.
Right.
My source lied to me. It's called The Dull Canvas. And basically, this isn't the type of thing we would usually review, because it's basically, they call it an interactive display. But what many people use it for is a digital canvas to draw upon. It comes with a pen, and a lot of architects and artists and professional designers use it. But we got to have a play with it. It was special because it's the first one in South Africa, as far as I know. And it was really interesting because it's a 24-inch, if I'm not remembering incorrectly. I think it's a 27-inch screen that you can lean on and write on. And it comes with three accessories that make it special. It comes with a pen, a digital pen, that can sense around 526 or something pressures. So basically, if you're in a program that supports like a paintbrush, the harder you push down, the bigger the slot will be. Mm. But then the other two are interesting. They're called totems. Now, HP called them totems, but what they really are knobs, volume knobs, basically. But they're not attached to anything.
Right.
They're free-floating. So what you can do is you can leave them to the side. The Dell canvas has a large border where you can put the pen and these totems. But what you can do is you can pick them off the side and put them on the screen. And depending on how you've set it up in the program you're using, it will change what you can do. So if you put it on the screen and you're just in Windows, you can use it to do the volume because it's a knob and that's exactly what you think it would do. But if you open another program, you can use it to select colors. So if you put it down and you press it, you can bring up a color wheel and you can choose the color you want. Another example we were shown is that these totems can be used as protractors, a circular protractor, a complete 360-degree protractor. And you can put it in on the program you're working with, and you can use your pen and you can draw perfect circles using this protractor.
Cool.
There's a lot of other things you can do. I was only shown those things. In honesty, the totems really feel like a gimmick at this point. Maybe it's what I was shown. Maybe it's because I'm not a professional artist or designer or whatever. But you could just do all these things with a mouse. I mean, so many keyboards have volume control, and you can set up volume control to be hue control as well. Maybe somebody will come up with a cool use for them. But then that's such a small amount of people who are going to get a use out of it. I mean, the Dell Canvas, I was told, is going to launch 1st July here. It has no RRP yet, but overseas it costs $1,799, which is 23,000 Rand. So this is definitely going to be for professionals, and I don't see them using it that much. I could be wrong, but if you see this at like a show or in an electronic store, I think go give it a try just to see what it is, because it's really unique and it's really strange. Other than the hardware, the event was actually for the Windows 10 Creators Update, and I got to see some cool stuff over there. The most impressive slash hit and miss one was inside of Windows. You can leave yourself notes in, I think it's called Sticky or something? Yeah, Sticky Notes. So if you've got Windows 10 and you just type into your search bar Sticky Notes, they're just little scraps of digital paper where you can leave stuff. But what you can do is you can link them into Bing, and say you type something, like the example I've shown is if you write down a flight number, it will bring up the flight details. And another thing that happens is if you type www.microsoft.com, it will bring up a hyperlink to microsoft.com. And the reason that's important is because I wasn't just typing this with a keyboard, I was writing this with a pen. So Windows was actually picking up my handwriting really well, even though I've got terrible handwriting.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very hit and miss. Now, I tried to go to our site, you know, right, www.htxt.co.za, and no matter what I tried, I couldn't navigate to our site. Now, that could be a few problems. It could have been the optical character recognition, which I think it was, because it kept bringing up like NTXT or something. Second of all, it could be Bing not searching well. Maybe our site's not popular enough for this program. Or it could be something else that I don't know of. But it was very hit and miss, but when it worked, it was interesting. And a few other things I got to play with. Just going back to the pen quick, it was really cool. This, I haven't used digital pens a lot, because again, I'm not an artist. But it was really cool. It really does feel like it's sensing how much pressure I'm putting down, and then it's got like it's got buttons on it, so you can draw, and if you make a mistake, you hold down one button and you can undo a draw, and then the end cap of the pen is a magnet, so you can stick it to the dull canvas's frame. And yeah, it was just, it was really interesting. The problem is that if you're not already an artist or a designer or an architect, you're not going to want one. They really cannot sell this to somebody who doesn't use that stuff. And for somebody who does use it and who's a professional, they will have to make the decision, because, you know, there's usually like Wacom and other brands like that who do this. And yeah, it's interesting. If you see it in a store, go give it a play. And it will be launched here in July, we've been told. And yeah. That's it. It works very well in Windows.
So it sounds to me like the sort of thing that even if you're not interested in it or you don't work in the field that is, it actually might be worth popping down to a Dion White or wherever they are displaying it, because it sounds like it would be just fun to play with.
Yeah, it definitely was fun to play with, especially because Paint, you know, good old MS Paint, now has a 3D modeler. I think it's just called Paint 3D. Which you can use to make things. Yeah, it's just called Paint 3D. You can use it to make 3D models. You can download 3D models, and you can use it to 3D print. And using this, like the digital pen in Paint 3D to draw stuff in 3D, was pretty cool as well. So yeah, give it a try. It's extra exciting if you don't usually interact with those things like me. Yeah, it's the Dell Canvas. Again, we'll have the full story to that with pictures and everything.
Okay, so rounding up this quickly, because we're running out of time, you've spent, I think, what was it, 24 to 26 hours playing a game called The Surge, which you described as basically Dark Souls, but set in the near future with what are they called? Basically, if you imagine the body frames from films.
Exoskeletons or exosuits from Elysium.
What was the other one that had them with Tom Cruise, where he was getting ganked every other minute? I know it was originally going to be called Live, Die, Repeat or something.
No, that was the tagline. It was called
The Edge of Tomorrow.
The Edge of Tomorrow. There we go. That's it. Actually, I liked that movie. Yeah, right. So it's like those suits that they use. You know, it's funny I should use that phrase and you should repeat it, because Sci-Fi Dark Souls, if you load up the Surge official website,
yeah,
they have that as like a critic, like a critical quote. They have that near the top, like as you load up the page, that's one of the first quotes you'll see, Sci-Fi Dark Souls. So I actually talked about this before, but when I did I think I was like early to middle in the game, but now I've finished it yesterday, the 24-hour journey. And sorry, let me repeat that. It's not that I've been playing it for one day, 24 hours. I mean, to finish the game, I sat down for like 24 separate one-hour sessions. It takes that long to finish the game.
Right.
And what it is, if you've ever played Dark Souls, if you've ever played Bloodborne, it's that. I don't want to call it a clone, but the controls feel almost exactly like those games, and it plays exactly like those games. I mean, instead of bonfires, you have something called medical ops. Instead of souls, which you collect by killing enemies and if they die, they fall on the ground, you have tech scrap. And the map design is also very similar, because the maps loop in on themselves. And you start in a central area, you'll go on a little expedition, and if you get far enough, you usually loop back to where you started, but now you've unlocked a shortcut. And what makes this game different is the setting. It's a near future, like dirty industrial. It looks really cool. Most of the enemies are like exosuit guys who something has happened to their mind and they've become crazy. And then there's also robots. And the second thing is that they made everything in this game feel really heavy. And I mean that in the best way possible, because like one of the weapons you get early in the game is just a huge piece of metal that's been slightly shaped to look like a sword. And it's like, it's as tall as you are, and your exosuit is like struggling to hold this piece of metal to your arm. And you can walk up to enemies and just like fling them into the sky with like cartoon physics. And it makes sense, because you're wearing a big exosuit. It's like giving you superhuman powers, but it's also turning you into like a tank. It's kind of like the power loader from Aliens. And it feels really good to play. As soon as you start playing, it feels great. But I have a lot of problems with it during the end game, which is what I wanted to speak about.
Right.
Really, it doesn't fall apart. It just gets worse near the end of the game. And that's for a few reasons. The map design gets much worse, more linear, and the parts that do like move around are more confusing than they were earlier. The enemy variety just takes a nosedive. Like Dark Souls 3, I remember when that came out, everyone was like, Dark Souls has always had great creature and character design, but a lot of the enemies in Dark Souls 3 are just guys in armor, while the end of the Surge are just guys with power suits in exoskeletons. And I don't know why. And this extends to the bosses too. I don't want to spoil what the bosses are or how many of them there are, but I was really disappointed with the late game bosses because their designs were so simple, and beating them also was so simple. The final boss, this won't be a spoiler, the final boss is like the easiest boss in the whole game. Like last night when I was finishing the game, I was just wandering around trying to see what to do, and I wasn't that prepared, and I stumbled into the final boss and beat him on my first try.
Wow.
If you've ever played a Dark Souls game, you know how unlikely that is. You almost never beat bosses on the first try, especially not the last boss.
Well, it's because most of the Dark Souls games hinge on you learning patterns.
Yeah.
Like, you learn attack patterns, movement patterns, and you're right. Like, even the mini-bosses can kill you outright, because you might wander up to something that, like, is this big, fat, bloated creature, and you think, oh, well, clearly he's going to be slow and lumbering but powerful attacks. The next thing you know, this thing is leaping towards you like a jumping jack.
Yeah, there were a lot of like surprises like that in the Surge as well. But yeah, I don't know if it was budget or time or just maybe it was
just they got to the stage where like, oh, what are we going to do for this last boss? Oh, stuff it, I'm off down the boozer.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I saw a lot of other people online agreeing with me who have also finished the game. And yeah, the end's really disappointing. But the first like two thirds, I'd say, are really, really, really good.
All right.
I have to put in the disclaimer that if you've never liked any of the Souls games or Bloodborne, this won't win you over. Adding robots and exoskeletons doesn't change up the core of what the game is. And I actually, I don't dislike the Souls games. I just never got into them. And I don't know if it's because I had to do a review on this or I really like the setting more, but I did sit down and finish The Surge.
Here's a question for you. Now that you've played The Surge and you've enjoyed it, do you think you'll give the Dark Souls games another go?
No, I don't think so. Just because I have tried at various points to finish them, I also think the Souls games are longer. Like, I think the Souls games are much longer than 24 hours. And I think the Surge... I spent a lot of the time grind... Not a lot, but I spent an appreciable amount of time grinding and dying and stuff like that. But that was actually enjoyable, especially grinding, because the game is such a high-pressure game where you need to put in a lot of focus that just going out to kill some mobs and farm up currency is actually pretty fun and, like, stress-free. But, I don't think I'd go to Dark Souls.
It may have been that you found your sort of version of the game that you enjoy. I mean, I never played Demon's Souls, but I played Dark Souls 2 and Dark Souls 3, and I never really got into them. But I played Bloodborne for ages, and that's basically a Souls game. The main difference is, though, you've got more ranged weapons, and I don't know what it was. I mean, the animation just felt smoother when I rolled away. You know, my roll dodge and my movement just felt a bit more fluid, and it felt like something I was able to do. And of course, I mean, I thought the world was far more terrifying and far more interesting to explore for the most part. But like I said, I'm not a Souls person, but I really liked Bloodborne and I played it quite a lot.
So it's interesting you mention that, because several people from Deck 13, who are the developers, they got asked on Reddit, they did an AMA, which Souls game is this closest to, and they did say Bloodborne.
Right.
So just to point out some differences quick, you don't have any ranged weapons.
Attack.
I use the word weapon especially there, because like, 2 or 3 hours in, you get a little drone, and you can use the drone not to damage enemies, but to bait them out. So if you see a group and you just want to fight one of them, you can shoot them with a laser once from your drone and then fight them. But almost all of it is melee, which makes sense, because this is like an industrial environment. You're hitting people with hammers and stuff. But instead of a roll, you have a sidestep and a backstep, like in Bloodborne. So they said it themselves, they took the most inspiration from Bloodborne, so maybe you will like this. But if you don't like the genre, you may not like it, or maybe you'll play this one and be like, now I understand what From Software has always been trying to do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, after that recommendation, I think I would probably give it a go, but now that you've told me all about this, what I want to do is reinstall Bloodborne and play that again. But anyway, I think that we've actually run out of life.
Yes, we've actually gone over. Next review, my review, and the stuff about the Dull Canvas will be under this. And we're going to have to call it for this week. Myself, from Nick.
Goodbye.
And from everybody else at HXT, this has been the AfriCast. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.